Hello, everybody, and welcome to Canada's newest radio show for Canadian and American electoral politics. Welcome to the Political Landscape. Hey, life, look at me. I can see the real time. Shook me, took me out of my world. I woke up. Suddenly, I just woke up to the happening. When you find it, that you love the future behind. Before I tell you what's happening, let me introduce myself. My name is Daniel Kundle, and I'm a fourth-year student at Bishop's University in Lennoxville. I'm honored to be the Nicholas Bishan Canadian Civil Society intern for the fall 2023 semester, and I would like to thank the Bishop's University Politics and International Studies Department and CJMQ-FM in Lennoxville for giving me this opportunity to be on the radio, discuss political topics that I'm very passionate about, and gain experience in the field of broadcasting. As alluded to in the intro, my segments will primarily focus on either Canadian or American electoral politics, and I look forward to introducing some very insightful guests onto the show over the next 10 weeks. The guests I have lined up are from cities such as Montreal and Winnipeg, the latter being my hometown, and the United States. I hope you enjoyed my song in the intro. I'm a big fan of Motown Records, but I do plan to change up the song every week. We're starting this show in the United States. We're going to recap Wednesday night's Republican presidential debate and individually analyze the performance of each candidate in attendance. The debate took place at the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library in Simi Valley, California. It was moderated by Fox Business Network host Stuart Varney, Fox News Channel host Dana Perino, as well as Univision's Ilya Calderon. Seven Republican candidates faced off, and like the first debate, the frontrunner, former President Donald Trump, was not in attendance. He was rallying supporters in Michigan instead. Unlike the first debate, however, former Arkansas Governor Asa Hutchinson did not meet the requirements to participate and had to sit this one out. I will talk about each candidate's performance in order of how they were placed on stage, which was determined by how well they polled among Republican primary voters. Therefore, I will start with Florida Governor Ron DeSantis at center stage. Then, I will work my way to the candidates on the right and left edges of the stage. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis has been dubbed as having a robotic personality. Whether it's his unnatural-looking mannerisms, him over-repeating talking points about woke ideology, never backing down and delivering results for Floridians, or awkward moments while talking to supporters on the campaign trail. As it turned out, I noticed he wasn't given a lot of time to speak during the debate, and when he interjected, it was more of just the same talking points. And in fact, most of the time it seemed like he didn't want to interject due to a fear of making a gaffe or simply because he just didn't know what to say. It can be argued that this passivity displayed by Governor DeSantis during the debate is actually tactical. After all, DeSantis likes to position himself as a no-nonsense, no-drama, no-sideshows, all-business alternative to Donald Trump. In short, his narrative is that he gets things done for Republicans in Florida, and when he does swing, it's through signing legislation, and he swings hard. DeSantis has made numerous politically controversial decisions since the beginning of 2023. I'm not just talking about the awkward moments, but things such as describing the Russia-Ukraine war as a, quote, territorial dispute, and then slowly walking back those comments. That said, somebody did email me the day after the debate saying, quote, I think that DeSantis came out looking better than the others. Stable, businesslike, consistent, solid, and seaworthy. After the 2022 midterms, Ron DeSantis was seen as the most electable Republican option for president in 2024, in that he could win both a Republican primary and a general election against Joe Biden or a Democrat like Governor Gavin Newsom of California. The problem for DeSantis now is that voters no longer see him as this type of candidate. In short, the more voters get to know Ron DeSantis, the less they like him. Businessman Vivek Ramaswamy has really been getting a lot of attention lately. He's in third place, only behind Donald Trump and Ron DeSantis. He has sort of been taking the spotlight away from Ron DeSantis in recent months, partially, in my view, because they share a similar group of Republican voters. MAGA Republicans, who believe Trump is too non-ideological, too self-destructive, too politically ineffective, or too unelectable. Although he has not seen any recent polling bumps since before the first debate, his ability to suck the oxygen off of the debate stage with his
unapologetically right-wing populist views and hyperbolic rhetoric is really something that took a lot of people by surprise. If not for all the attention directed towards him by his opponents and the media, it's arguable that he wouldn't be in third place right now, but rather hanging below 1% with some of the other politicians who are businessmen and non-politicians, such as Larry Elder or Perry Johnson. In the debate, he was pounced on for previous business dealings with the Chinese Communist Party when he was a pharmaceutical industry executive at Roivant Sciences, a company he founded. It's clear that all of the other candidates on stage are disgusted that he's even there in the first place. Ramaswamy's opponents have been sure to capitalize on the questions about Vivek Ramaswamy's past. For example, some of the business deals that went on in his company, or his previous ideological stances, because before, a few years ago, he was a relatively unknown figure, and his political beliefs were unknown. Ramaswamy was also criticized for his hypocrisy regarding TikTok. For the record, he supports a ban on TikTok for children under 16, but he also recently joined the app. He dodged his question and instead pivoted. The part of the debate where Ramaswamy arguably drew the most criticism was foreign policy. Ramaswamy has pacifist, non-interventionist views on the Russia-Ukraine war, and he struggled to defend himself when his opponents pounced on him, particularly South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley. Former South Carolina Governor and UN Ambassador Nikki Haley was largely regarded as the winner of the first debate. Her campaign is one of traditional Republican policies mixed with tough love, meaning that she is cautious to overpromise to Republican primary voters. She frequently points out the structural realities of American government that make big changes hard to achieve. This is why she's much less likely than her other opponents to point out what she'll do in her first 100 days in office. She also has been open about the fact that it's very unlikely that the Republicans will have 60 Senate seats by 2025, meaning it will be harder to pass legislation in the U.S. Senate. Like the first debate, she was the most aggressive in attacking Vivek Ramaswamy. Interestingly, however, she also took a few swipes at fellow South Carolinian Senator Tim Scott, whom she actually appointed to that position in 2012 when she was governor. Michael Brendan Dougherty, a senior writer at the National Review, sees this new rivalry between Nikki Haley and Tim Scott as a sign that their donors are probably getting eager for the field to winnow down so Trump doesn't have a divided opposition. After all, Haley and Scott are fairly similar candidates policy-wise. They're both traditional style Republicans, and the fact that they are both still in the race hurts both of their chances in the all-too-important South Carolina primary, which will take place on February 24th. There's still time, but it's important to remember that this is a state that, due to home state advantage, Haley and Scott alone in this race would likely do fairly well in against Trump. It's possible that only one of them will be in the race by the time that primary comes up. It's also possible, however, that they're both hedging their bets on doing very well in that primary to boost their profile. Either way, to Trump's benefit, they're splitting each other's votes in South Carolina. As for Tim Scott's performance, he continued displaying his campaign theme of refreshing optimism, which fitted the room well because the debate was held at the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library. The first question of the debate was directed at him, and it was on the United Auto Workers strikes happening in the country. In a previous encounter with a reporter, Tim Scott said that he would fire any workers on strike. At the debate, however, he backtracked on those, I guess you could say, Reagan-esque comments, and quickly changed the topic to the crisis at the southern border. It should be noted that firing union workers on strike is no longer the mainstream position in Republican presidential primaries that it may have been back in the 1980s when Ronald Reagan was the head of the party. This is one of the ways that Donald Trump has shifted the Overton window within the Republican Party itself. When he ran for president in 2016, Donald Trump appealed to culturally and socially conservative union workers, accelerating their already growing dissatisfaction with the modern Democratic Party, and brought them into the Republican Party fold. Going back to Tim Scott's recurring theme of optimism, at the debate he repeated the line, quote, "America is not a racist country." He first said this in a speech responding to Biden's first joint session of Congress in 2021. Tim Scott, who's African American, builds his campaign on his belief that, although he faced racism and prejudice, he was able to, in a way, overcome it and still be successful, and also the idea that the United States is not a systemically racist country. Similarly, and unsurprisingly, Tim Scott also evoked Ronald Reagan at the debate by using his famous line that America is, quote, the shining city on a hill. Former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie has been branding himself as the anti-Trump attack dog candidate ever since he entered the presidential race. While this may be appealing to some in the primary electorate, this is not a winning strategy, and Chris Christie knows this. In a way, Christie 2024 is a kamikaze candidacy aimed at weakening Donald Trump ahead of the 2024 general election. However, with Donald Trump not appearing at any debate yet, Christie's zingers to Trump have really just come up short. One of these zingers Wednesday night was, quote, Donald, I know you're watching. You can't help yourself. You're afraid of being on the stage and defending your record. You keep doing that, nobody up here is going to keep calling you Donald Trump. We're going to call you Donald Duck. Former Vice President Mike Pence is less concerned about soundbites than Chris Christie. Like Ron DeSantis, former Vice President Mike Pence felt absent from this debate. Pence's campaign, in my opinion, just has too many issues going for it. He's not as strong as Nikki Haley in calling out Ramaswamy and populism. He's not as policy-oriented as Doug Burgum. He's also disliked by hardcore MAGA Republicans because he rightfully certified Biden's 2020 presidential win on January 6, 2021. To the contrary, Mike Pence is also too tied to Donald Trump to really make any headway with independents, moderates, or anti-Trump Republicans. After all, he was Donald Trump's vice president for 4 years. The one thing Pence may have going for him is his character. He has a calm demeanor. Then again, however, if you're a non-populist Republican primary voter who wants a change from all the national polarization and divisiveness from candidates like Donald Trump and Vivek Ramaswamy, you got younger, less polarizing candidates than Mike Pence. For example, Nikki Haley and Tim Scott. Haley and Scott are also polling better than, or even with, Mike Pence. Finally, we have North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum, who is the lowest in the polls out of all the contenders for this debate. He is a mostly self-funded candidate. He's also the second wealthiest candidate in the race, the wealthiest being Donald Trump. In fact, Burgum met his small dollar donor requirements for the first debate by giving $20 gift cards to anybody who donated $1 to his campaign. Meaning, if you donated to his campaign $1, you would make a profit of $19. By qualifying for the first debate in August, Burgum has been able to boost his profile since then, which I have no doubt is part of the reason why he was able to qualify for the second debate. Generally speaking, Burgum is well-liked by all factions of the party, partially because he's not a threat to any other candidate because he's polling so low, but he's also still relatively unknown to most voters. Burgum is centering his run for president around three topics: the economy, energy, and national security. I was struck by Burgum's knowledge of substantive policy in the debate. He also likes to mention what he did as governor in North Dakota a lot. Burgum is also a proud constitutionalist, often bringing up the 10th Amendment, which is the amendment in the U.S. Constitution that outlines states' rights and the role of the federal government. And he uses the 10th Amendment to rationalize a lot of his positions on the touchier issues such as abortion, parental rights, and the Second Amendment, which is the right to bear arms. Not only does Doug Burgum strongly believe in states' rights, but evoking the 10th Amendment also provides him with a political off-ramp. It allows him to not have to defend controversial positions made by some in the Republican Party, such as restricting abortion nationwide. So, now that we've discussed all the candidates at this debate, what does all this mean? Well, Trump is still well ahead in polling, having 40-point leads ahead of Ron DeSantis in most polls. It is therefore very unlikely that he won't win the nomination. Trump's criminal indictments have at this point only made him more supported among the primary electorate, and it doesn't appear that Trump is willing to drop out even if his eventual court appearances interfere with his campaigning. The New York Times chief political analyst, Nate Cohn, described these Republican debates so far as a race for second place. That said, I think it must be dawning on some of these Republican candidates now that they may not be able to just wait in this Republican race for Trump to be consumed by his legal troubles and eventually drop out. In fact, it's likely that Donald Trump's largest driving factor for running for president in 2024 is the indictments themselves. If he wins the general election and becomes president again, he can hypothetically pardon himself. Back to the polling, I should note, however, that polling is closer in the earlier states in the primary calendar. DeSantis has been racking up state politician endorsements in Iowa, and Chris Christie has been making a play for New Hampshire with his appeal to moderates and independents. As for the next debate, which will take place on November 8th in Miami, the ante will be raised to make it onto the debate stage. A candidate will need to have 70,000 individual donors and hit 4% in either two national polls or one national poll and two polls from separate early states. According to the Real Clear Politics average of national polls, Doug Burgum is at 0.9%, Chris Christie is at 2.7%, Tim Scott is at 2.8%, and Mike Pence is at 4.2%. Jim Garrity from the National Review says that Wednesday night, quote, was likely make or break for a bunch of lower tier candidates. That's it for today. Thanks for listening to The Political Landscape. I'm Daniel Kundle, and I hope I catch you next time.